Captain's log. Stardate 41235.25. Our location, planet Ligon 2. Source of a rare vaccine needed on Federation planet Styris 4. Starfleet has instructed me to engage in a friendly visit and open treaty negotiations to acquire this medicinal substance.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Penske File. We are continuing our Star Trek The Next Generation let's watch with Code of Honor. The fourth episode of the first season is directed by Russ Mayberry and Les Landau and written by Catherine Powers and Michael Barron. So let's get to what this episode is about. The Enterprise arrives at planet Ligon 2 to acquire a vaccine needed to combat an outbreak of Anchilles fever on Styris 4. The crew, possessing little information on the Ligonian culture, finds it follows strict customs of status similar to ancient Africa. Specifically, while the men in their culture rule society, the land itself is controlled by the women. Lutan, the Ligonian leader, transports up to the Enterprise to provide a sample of the vaccine and is impressed by Lieutenant Tasha Yar's status as head of security. Yar further demonstrates her Aikido skills against a holographic opponent for Lutan on the holodeck. After a tour of the ship, Lutan and the Ligonians abduct Yar as they transport back to the surface of the planet. Captain Jean-Luc Picard demands that Lutan return Yar, considering the kidnapping an act of war, but receives no response from the planet. After consultation with his officers, Picard determines that Lutan took Yar in a counting coup as a show of heroic action. Picard contacts Lutan in a more peaceful manner, who grants permission for the Enterprise crew to beam down to the planet and promises to return Yar after a banquet in his honor. Lutan announces at the banquet that he will make Yar his first one, surprising not only the Enterprise crew, but also Yurina, who believed that she was already selected by Lutan. Yurina is the first wife who is already there. Yurina challenges Yar to a fight to the death to claim back the position, and while Picard objects to the fight, Lutan refuses to give the Enterprise the rest of the vaccine unless Yar participates. The crew investigates the combat ritual and finds that the weapons are coated with a lethal poison, and also that is Yurina's wealth to which Lutan owes his position. Picard prepares to have Yar beam back to the Enterprise, should she be harmed in the battle. As the match progresses, both Yurina and Yar are equally skilled, but Yar eventually lands a strike on Yurina. Yar quickly covers Yurina and orders the transport of both of them to the Enterprise against the demands of Lutan. Aboard the ship, Dr. Beverly Crusher reaches Yurina moments after death, but is able to counteract the poison and revive her. When Lutan demands to know the fate of Yurina, Crusher reveals that Yurina died, thus ceding the match to Yar and breaking the first one bond. Yurina is now free to select a new mate. She chooses Hagon, one of Lutan's bodyguards, and effectively strips Lutan of his position of power. Hagon lets Yar go and gives the Enterprise their full supply of vaccine. So, let's get to our thoughts about the episode.
First Officer's Log, Supplemental. Captain Picard, faced with the critical need for a vaccine produced on this planet, has permitted Lieutenant Natasha Yar to engage in a fight to the death. I have yet to understand his reasoning or his plan.
All right, so this is Code of Honor, the fourth episode of the first season of Star Trek. I guess to sort of bury the lead, or whatever the saying is, this is not a very good episode of Star Trek. This is, I think it's considered one of the worst, and it's easy to see why. It's a very weakly written episode that is basically comes across as racist and sexist all in one. So it definitely hasn't aged well. And I can get into a little bit of the backstory, I guess, about it after I've discussed it. But yeah, even at the time it was made, it was sort of controversial. And it is a very strange episode where this alien Ligonian race is basically portrayed as a African tribe. And the problem is that all the people who are cast are black. So it leads to this weird racist type thing, and I think you could have gotten around it if you hadn't cast the entire alien culture as black people, because it makes it very obvious what you're going for. But they're very they fall into a lot of sort of black stereotypes. It's like they're highly sexual, they're very interested in this white woman, and they're very violent, and they are not monogamous. So it fits these weird sort of black stereotypes to a T, and it's incredibly awkward. They walk and talk as if they are an African tribe. They sort of have this very stilted, honor-bound culture. And it's sexist in the sense that for no particular reason at all, Yar is like enamored by being kidnapped by them. They have these very strange scenes where Troy asks her if she's basically, you know, pleased to be kidnapped. And Yara acts as if it's a trick question when she admits that, yeah, she's a little turned on, basically, by this guy who's kidnapped her and wants to fight for her. So it's this strange situation where a woman gets kidnapped, a white woman gets kidnapped by a black guy, and then the white woman is just enamored with this, with her kidnapper. While all the while the black tribe is basically acting as stereotypically as you can, without going completely out of bounds. But it's an awkward episode. The crew and the cast were not pleased with it when it came out. It, I guess I can go into it now, but the director, who's, what's his name? The, Russ Mayberry. This is his one and only episode of directing. I guess he was the one responsible. He's the director of the episode. He was the one responsible for the casting, it seems. This is what I've gathered from reviewing. And so he was fired halfway through the episode. Some were saying because of the casting decision, and some were saying he was being racist to the actual cast as they were filming this episode. So he was fired halfway through, and the first assistant director, who's Les Landau, I guess, finished the work. But yeah, it seems to, it comes across very strange. Outside of that awkwardness, which I guess is enough to really knock it down into the sort of bottom of the barrel, it's sloppy. It continues this Next Generation thing of no one seems to have particular roles on this ship. They willingly let Wesley Crusher just sort of come onto the bridge. It's got this very loosey-goosey. There's no rank or roles to anybody's interactions, really. Wesley can just sort of walk onto the bridge. This is like a, you know, this is a starship and basically like preceding a war event here, and Wesley's just allowed to sit at ops, fly around, do whatever. Riker, Troy. Troy actually does serve a purpose in this. She is much more of a counselor role in terms of counseling the captain about what's going on. She actually uses her Betazoid emotion sensing a couple times in this episode, too, without being too awkward or dramatic like she has been in previous episodes. But it's it continues this very weak sort of characterization about what's going on. There's no particular roles that people go to. Riker sticks up and says that he wants to go down to the planet, but because the Ligonians are so honor-bound, only Picard should go down, or at least they'll respect him a little bit more. It's got a lot of bad fight scenes, which are terrible. It's got a lot of bad lines. The script is very dull, very boring. They were saying when the showrunner at the time was saying that he didn't think the idea was bad. He thought the execution was terrible, and I guess he would be talking about hiring all black actors to play this role. But he's saying that he was interested in the storyline where a person kidnaps somebody basically just to sort of gain wealth for himself, which is the plot line of this, where if Yar wins, then this Lutan will gain the property of his ex-first wife, and then he'll have Yar as well. So it's not sheer sexual, you know, promiscuity or anything. I guess there is sort of a logic to what he's doing, and that story is okay, but it is hidden behind all these awkward, weird things. Outside of that, it's got a lot of sloppy either writing or production work going. Picard, in one of the captain's log, pronounces Lutan differently. He pronounces once Lutan, and then he says Luton. So there's all kinds of weird things like that going on where they can't get the pronunciation correct, and even in the same, I would assume it's the same take. It's pronounced twice, two different ways. But the other, another weak aspect would be the vaccine is sort of a MacGuffin, which is a MacGuffin is like an event or an item in a TV show that sort of propels the plot forward. If it weren't for this vaccine, it would be very easy to just transport Yar out of there and escape. But the crew is dealing with this vaccine problem where there's scarlet fever or something going on another planet, and millions of people are dying, and so they're bound to get this vaccine from these people, and they can't violate the first Prime directive or anything like that. Although I thought first contact was they would not talk to people or make contact with other races until they had like warp flight. I don't think these guys have warp flight. They don't seem to be able to move around in space. They just have this vaccine, and they seem extremely primitive, like even, you know, just sort of honor-bound. They're very Klingon-esque in how they are, but I thought first contact was reserved for people who traveled faster than light, but I guess maybe this gets around it somehow. But Picard does complain about the Prime Directive in this episode as a reason why they can't just take Yar and leave, because that would be interfering with their cultural development, even though someone wrongs you, which is a weird ethical thing, I think, that Star Trek occasionally covers. There's one episode coming up later where people talk about the Prime Directive much more involved. I think it's the one where Riker goes to a planet and is discovered before first contact, something like that. And there's the whole ethical thing about when do you interfere. But this is a very prototypical type episode dealing with that stuff. It's not really important. The vaccine exists only to keep people on the planets instead of just beaming them up and zooming off. So there's a couple good things to this episode. If not good things, there's a couple interesting things that are worth mentioning. I think this is the first episode that shows Geordi and Data as friends. They have a strange scene where Geordi is shaving and Data is talking to him about sense of humor and jokes. It has nothing to do with the plot, really, which is another common theme of these early episodes. But it's the first scene where they actually act like they are the best friends that they would soon become as the series goes on. They have a lot of that Geordi laughing at Data as Data tries to understand what humanity is. And so that was nice to have that scene. It's the very first one, I think. Before that, they weren't really particularly close. You never saw them acting close. And the other thing is that this is the first time you see the holodeck sort of deactivated, which is the black room with the yellow cross pattern, or checkered pattern, I guess. It's not really checkered, but the lines, the yellow lines in the black holodeck. And it's the first time you see that. We've only seen the holodeck when a program has been running, like in the pilot episode where Riker goes in to meet Data, and there's a program of like a forest. So that's interesting. The holodeck is going to come back in a big way, obviously. Not a lot of people's favorite episodes, the holodeck episodes, but either way, this is the early stuff that you get to see from them. But yeah, those are the two basic good things, if not good things, at least stuff that sort of stuck around. The rest of the episode is pretty awful. The plot's silly. There's the weird Crusher and Picard interaction where Crusher goes into the Red Room and tells Picard that people are dying from this, and has he ever held someone who's dying from scarlet fever or whatever this disease is called? It's not called scarlet fever. What is it called? Achilles fever. Achilles fever. And Picard goes, no, but I have experienced death, which is an obvious callback to Wesley Crusher's line from the pilot where Picard delivered his father's dead body to him and Dr. Crusher. So that was it's a little bit of a personal dig. I don't know how well that would go over in the real world as bringing that up as somebody. But it's another awkward Crusher-Picard thing. The show, I guess, seems to be trying to hint at something to them, but their exchanges are so stilted and strange that it's really hard to figure out. And then we see Wesley Crusher, who is not too obnoxious in this episode, but he is on the bridge for no particular reason, which doesn't make sense in the context of the show. He is wearing the same sweater he was wearing in the pilot, I think, the enormous space sweater. So that shows how low budget I think the show was at this point, or what they could afford. He's wearing the same exact clothing. It makes no sense. Everyone's wearing the same uniform, so you figure they got more than one uniform. This kid's only got one sweater. It continues the weird thing of Data being too informative. This time Data insults French, which upsets Picard. You know, French is the language of civilization, he tells Data. Data thinks that French is a obscure language from Earth. And everyone laughs at him. And it has another scene of Data telling too much information, although when he is explaining why they can't beam people back, or why they can't find where the Ligonians took Yar, he explains why it happens, because they use some sort of weird transport technology. But I felt like that was an explanation that would have made sense. He cuts himself off, no one even interrupts him, and he says he's being too informative. But I felt that was the one time where his information was actually relevant and useful. So that was a weird scene. And then the fight scene is particularly atrocious, although it looks much better in the HD on Amazon, the streaming version here. The lights of the arena, I guess, where Yar and Yarina fight, look much, much nicer in this HD version than they do in the original version. They certainly don't look realistic, or as if they're energy. I think they're supposed to be energy beams, like glowing yellow beams that the fighters seem to be avoiding. But they look nice in HD. They look ultra SETI, like they were constructed and built in like a set. But they do glow nicely, and so that's a very nice thing. And Yar, for some reason, has a headband, even though her hair is probably shorter than mine. It's like an inch long. And I don't know why she would need a headband, but she has one to fight with her spiked mace hand weapon. So yeah, not a lot going on in this episode. Another bad plot, another silly sort of premise, the racism and sexism is stupid. The character interactions don't make a lot of sense. It feels very loose about what the characters have there for their motivations. Dr. Crusher continues to be a weird, underused character. Wesley Crusher continues to just be up there for no particular reason. And Yar is basically, for someone who's, I think it does, this episode does a lot of like disservice to Yara's character. It makes really no sense. We know from previous episodes she was raised on like a hostile planet with rape gangs. And so she was raised in this horrible, horrible situation on like basically a like lawless planet. So you think she would be a little bit more hard-edged or something, but she's extremely flippy-floppy in how the writers portray her. Which might be why Denise Crosby leaves eventually, but it's she does not stay consistent in any of the episodes that you see. It's when her inhibitions went down and then Naked Now, she's sort of, you know, like flirty and sleeps with Data. She's portrayed as this hardcore, aggressive security chief, but then she's smitten by this guy who abducts her. She has no center to her character, which is very problematic and doesn't really make any sense. And she's taking screen time from Worf. I don't think Worf even appears in this episode. Worf's role is kind of useless at this point. Yar is there, but she's the most flippy floppy of the characters so far. Everyone else is kind of rounding into what they would eventually be. Yar continues to just sort of hedge on both sides, which is frustrating. You know, if you think that she's supposed to be this badass security guard, you'd think she'd be a little bit more aggressive and sort of strong-willed. And it's shown that she is the opposite of that in every situation we've seen. She is the first one to sort of flip-flop back and forth between how she feels and what's going on, and it's like this weird sexist thing in this episode. So, not a good showing for Yar. Not a good showing for the writers, and not a good showing for Russ Mayberry, who directed this and was fired halfway through, for his poor, poor casting decisions. Just a little bit of other trivia on this one, if not trivia. I guess Jonathan Frakes wanted this episode to never be aired again after it had aired the first time. He sought to prevent it from being re-aired. Wesley Crusher reviewed it in 2008. He said he didn't remember appearing in the episode, and it was the first time since originally broadcast that he had seen it. He said it wasn't good, but it was not, quote, as overtly racist as I recalled. I mean, it's certainly not as racist as Angel One is sexist, and if the Ligonians hadn't been arbitrarily determined to be entirely African-American, it wouldn't have even been an issue, which I guess is true, but it is, they were all African-American, and it made it painfully obvious what the writers were going for. It's honestly as if you just cast all Asian people and just like they were terrible at driving, you know, the spaceships and they did math really well. It was basically on that level. Really stupid. 1987. And yeah, a lot of other reviews just don't have a very good things to say about this. AV Club gave it a C-. Said, I'm not sure I'd believe a great show could come out of The Next Generation after watching this episode, but at least I can say it had promise without sounding like a complete tool, which I don't really know. I don't think the episode's all that good. And Tor.com in 2011 said the episode was riddled with cliche and that it seems racist because of the casting, even though the script didn't call for it, which was true. He gave it a 2 out of 10. The Trek Nation thought the episode was badly paced, which I agree with. Not a lot happens in this episode, and the fight scene at the end was truly clunky and awkward, which it absolutely was. Yeah, so that's it. That is Code of Honor, another bad episode of Star Trek. But I think the next one coming up, what is next? The Last Outpost. Maybe that's not the best one, but we do get a couple decent episodes coming up pretty soon, so I'm looking forward to that. But yeah, let me know what you thought about Code of Honor, if you liked this episode, or what you think. Leave a comment. Otherwise, if you don't mind, if you could throw a like on this video, that would be greatly appreciated. I do like doing this stuff, and I will keep doing it, even if no one watches it. That is fine by me, but I'm enjoying this. Code of Honor was enjoyable to watch for how bad it was, and I will come back in a couple days with The Last Outpost. So, thank you guys for watching. I'll see you later.